From the Irish pub in Atlantic City, this is the Atlantic City Story, where we bring you the stories and the people shaping the future of the city. I'm Buzz Keough.
I'm Christian Hetrick.
And I'm Nicholas Huba.
And this week, we start with a story about percentages.
Yes, the infamous 13.5% that the county has said that it must have in order to avoid a major tax hike for county tax residents. They ended up only getting 10% of the casino pilot, but I did some research over the last couple weeks, and if you toss out the percentages and you just look at how much money they got from the casinos last year compared to how much they're getting this year, they're getting more money from the pilot by about $500,000. So
you're saying they're getting more money, but they still have to raise taxes.
Well, I don't know why they have to still raise taxes, but I do know that they are getting more money from the casinos this year. So that is a fact. I verified that with the state, and the county actually tried to give me a little bit of different figures, but after I talked to them, they realized that they were including casinos that are not in the pilot anymore because they're closed and de-restricted.
And the state wasn't going to let that slide. I mean, the state was responding. Every time the county was talking about percentages, they were trying to drill into the numbers.
Right, and actually, well, the I think to the state's fault, though, they were actually drilling on the percentages, too. They were saying, oh, well, they're getting 10% this time, they got 10% last time. What I was trying to do was just forget the percentages. It doesn't tell anybody really anything, and just get into the dollars and cents. And when you do it that way, it's $11.9 million last year. It's $12.5 million this year. They're getting more.
Then why would the county be so hell-bent on getting that 13%? Like, what is behind that reasoning?
Well, there's a couple things. They still give out tax refunds for all the casino tax appeals that have hurt the city. It hurts the county as well. So they say they need extra tax money to cover that. And listen, I mean, they were against the pilot. The extra money was a way to kind of buy them off, for lack of a better, you know, phrase. And so I think that got them on board, you know, when they thought they were going to get an extra $4 million per year.
So it was kind of necessary in the beginning to say...
Politically necessary, yeah. But I don't know if it's ever actually been financially necessary.
But if that's the case, when you break those types of promises, there's repercussions to that.
And that's the argument that the county probably does win, is that Mayor Don Guardian, Governor Chris Christie, there's been public statements throughout, you know, the year since 2014 that they were supposed to get this, and they didn't. But again, that's a political argument, not a financial one.
And I wonder if they planned in their budget for this 13.5% and if they needed it to cover something specifically. Like maybe an increase in a contract somewhere, or this one-time kind of balloon issue, without the budget being introduced, we have no idea.
That could be the reveal, right? There could be something that you know they have not talked about, that you know the budget, but for whatever reason, it's just gone up for whatever reasons, and that's why, that's maybe the real reason why the tax increase is needed, not because they're getting less money from the casinos or not.
Wasn't it also that the county does so much for Atlantic City?
You want to pivot to the list?
Oh, let's pivot right to this list.
Let me background on the list. So in doing these interviews this week for this story and finding out really that the county was kind of, you know, being a bit maybe misleading with how much money they were getting, they sent me a list of all the services they do for Atlantic City. But it's not really services that they're doing on behalf of the city, like trash or police. It's more like, this is what we do anyway, but they have all the stats to back it up. Do you want to read how many cats and dogs were collected by the animal shelter?
Yeah, impounded from Atlantic City, 138 dogs and 191 cats.
But how many animals were adopted?
19 dogs and 47 cats.
So there's a lot of unaccounted animals. They're either dead or not.
Do you think every city keeps this list, or every county, or the county keeps this list for every city?
I definitely think this list was produced for the political purpose of saying, look how much we do for Atlantic City. Because, I mean, it even breaks it down of how many 1,000 residents have checked out 14,000 books and at the library. And so
I want this list from Hamilton Township, where I live. I want to know how many dogs are missing and how many books have been checked out. Like, this is such it's a PR stunt, this list. That's all it is.
These are things that the county already does, right? Jail, library, animal shelter. They're just giving us the stats for how it pertains to Atlantic City. Oh, 20% of them are from Atlantic City. But it's not the county is not doing a service on behalf of the city that the city would normally be doing itself.
Two stories we just wrote recently about. One is the county police department. Is that still on the table?
No, I don't think so. The one interesting thing that happened recently was when the firefighters were in court. The state threatened, you know, hey, if you don't take your cuts, you know, we'll do a regional fire department. But it doesn't seem like the county's on board. And, you know, the whole point of what Chiesa did with these unilateral cuts to their pay and the layoffs, I mean, that saves the city money. So I don't know if you really even need to do that to you know, save the city money.
And what about the water utility? There were rumors it was being sold. The rumors weren't true. But at the same time, this week, Atlantic City Councilman Kaleem Shabazz asked the county to reconsider buying it.
Well, yeah, there's a few things happening with that. Christie, interestingly, going back a couple weeks, suddenly seemed like he wasn't into the necessarily having to have the MUA sold or anything like that. He said he'd look at it carefully and be protective of the MUA. Meanwhile, you have residents who are petitioning to you know, have nothing be done with the MUA. But you're right, Buzz. Councilman Shabazz reached out to Levinson. And said, hey, you know, let's revive talks about the county possibly buying or leasing the water system. It would still stay in quote-unquote public hands, but it would have the similar effect of selling it and getting tens of millions of dollars for the city. Yeah, the county would buy it, the city would pay down a third of its debt, but the utility would still be in public hands. People are afraid of private ownership, fearing rate hikes, and all the stuff that goes along with a private company running your water, I guess.
All right, let's flash forward to a topic that Nick has been covering, the Hard Rock.
Yes, it's going to transform the city, I think. But I think the biggest transformation is going to be their ability to maybe bring entertainment across the week. Right now, the city, Jim Allen said during the press conference, it's a day-and-a-half economy. They go back to a situation at their Florida property where they had Chris Rock Wednesday, Thursday, sold both shows out. And I think that's what they're going to try to do, is bring more people to the boardwalk during the weekday. And we're already seeing that with the city in the beach concert series. Think it's coming on a weekday.
What's the benefit?
On the weekend you have 90 and 95% occupancy. And
I was going to say, they're there regardless.
They're there regardless. Christian's there every weekend.
Right. And I have a tough time getting a room. So, I mean, I they're already kind of sold out.
Area of opportunity.
Room for growth.
It's like anything else. You want to prop the bottom up, and the whole thing kind of rises. So I think that's what they're trying to do, you know. And they have a brand that is extremely powerful. Their connections to AEG, which is a huge entertainment conglomerate out of Los Angeles, they think they can draw acts to the city that no one else can.
I think the photo that ran with your story was pretty cool. Who took that for us? Do you know who?
Craig Matthews.
Craig Matthews, staff photographer for the Press of Atlantic City. You see the boardwalk on a Friday, right?
It was
a Friday.
Yeah.
And it's like you can roll a bowling ball down the middle that not hit anybody. And then you go Saturday and it's jam-packed. And I just think that was very telling. You know,
those
it was a
photos,
good photo of showing your point.
Those photos were taken at the exact same time.
Same location.
Same location, yeah. Same time, same weather, same everything. And it just shows that this is a weekend city.
Brilliant idea.
Yes, it was your idea.
Thank you.
I laughed at it at first, don't worry.
All right, let's move on. Politics is the next stop. Let's start in Atlantic City, where there was a mayoral debate.
Yeah.
And by all accounts, it was pretty civil.
Sometimes. So the city council one was very civil. They agreed, I think, on everything except for bankruptcy. The running mates for Frank Gilliam supported bankruptcy. The running mates for Marty Small did not. Of course, the running mates for Gilliam say, like, look, you know, we'll take the politics out of these decisions, go to have a judge do it. You know, if the casinos can go bankrupt, if the president can go bankrupt, you know, so can we and come out stronger. Whereas the guys running with Marty Small say, hey, look, if you do this, your credit rating is shot. You know, that's how most towns borrow to build their cities, schools, infrastructure, things like that. So you don't want to do this. Your reputation with, you know, lenders will be ruined forever. The mayoral debate was definitely more lively. Marty Small, who's a Democrat running for mayor, the council president, really wasted no time going after Councilman Frank Gilliam. He took his opening statement and just called Gilliam a special interest candidate. Later said, I don't even think Gilliam's had a real job before. Really, you know, nasty attack lines. And then, of course, Gilliam, you know, I think Gilliam tried to stay a bit more positive, but he did return fire a little bit, you know, accused Marty Small of trying to vote with the state and dissolve the MUA and things like that. The state takeover, I would say, looms large over the whole debate because it was, you know, who is best protecting the city's interests from the state was really the crux, I think, of what the debate was. And then, of course, you had the other candidates, Joe Palillo, who, you know, talked about the Sunshine Law, and Jimmy Whitehead, who talked about bringing the cybersecurity industry here. But it was a lively debate. It was a packed cafeteria in the Uptown School Complex. So even though local officials have kind of been stripped of all their power, the electorate is like still very engaged. And sometimes they would kind of like boo the if they didn't like the comments or being said, they would boo and or cheer if they liked. And so it was a pretty lively environment.
Have the issues that the candidates brought up, have they matched what you're hearing from the public that they're concerned about?
Gentlemen? Well, there's definitely part of that. There's definitely, like, you know, I report on the super PAC way back trying to tie Small to a heroin trafficker. I mean, I don't think anybody really is talking about that. That was kind of just your typical, you know, nasty election campaign tactic. I mean, a lot of people care about taxes. They care about unemployment. They care about foreclosures. And those issues were talked about during the debate. I just don't know if they're getting really talked about in the campaign advertisements. You know, I think that's where you see the really nasty attacks.
It looks like the next governor is going to do away with the state takeover, correct?
That's what they say.
Okay. Do you think
we'll change the name on it?
Or we'll give them a different overseer or
the SWAT team instead of a takeover.
Wow. Do you think there's kind of an excitement level or an interest because that's being eliminated? Maybe they'll be given the first chance to govern on a level playing field?
That was talked about during the debate, this idea that, like, you know, the winner of this election should have his city back, whoever that winner is.
And so, in good not great financial
better
shape.
Better financial shape, absolutely.
You can take the victory lap on Hard Rock. There's a lot of stuff coming in where the guy who wins this election could set the city up for a long time.
And Borgata is taken care of, and you know, we'll see what happens in court with the police and fire, but you talk about your bonded casino debt or your, you know, obligations for public safety pensions and stuff. I mean, both of those should be reduced by the time the next mayor comes in office.
Well, before we leave, let's just take a moment to kind of reflect on our surroundings. And this was a great idea by Nick. He wanted to take the podcast out of the newsroom.
Road trip.
Why not? We're just going to stare in our little studio in that very sterile environment we have.
The Irish Pub has this deep, rich history with Atlantic City.
I was over here a couple months ago, and Glenn Straub had one of his hearings over there, and we came over, Wayne Perry, I, and Amy Roseberg all had lunch over here, and it was just, it's iconic. It's just low ceilings. You know, if you're over 6'4", you're going to die probably walking in the door. You have to watch the steps coming in. Like, I think it takes you back to what the history of the city was, pre-casinos, pre-entertainment. Like, this was the place everyone gathered. And I think it holds such a sentimental place for everybody. When you walk in, it's just history. There's old newspaper clippings all over the walls, you know, old posters from different shows that were in town. It just brings you back to a time where the city was just the city.
I like, one of the things I like about this place, you know, it's 24 hours, right? Like, there's no locks on the doors, right? Because they're always open. I think that's really neat because it kind of goes back to, like, the city's history, like you said, like, just kind of like, you know, these maybe were like the places to be in Atlantic City, you know, before the casinos, and it is neat.
When I called Kathy to ask her if we could do this here, we started talking for a little bit. She called me at like 10:30. She's like, oh, I'm just waking up and getting ready to go. And I'm like, well, what time do you go to bed? 6 a.m. I'm like, all righty then. Like, she's here like all the time. And I think she's a critical part of the history of the city.
And it's City Hall, very a regular, you know, she goes, you know, you did a story recently, right? She was advocating against the food trucks, but has fundraisers, right, for the police foundations and things like that. And it's definitely someone who's always involved. And this place, too, for my purposes, I mean, I've had to see a couple politicians kick off campaigns here. So, like, you know, Chris Brown kicked off one of his campaigns here. Mayor Guardians had events here. So
you can't ignore this place.
Right.
And you shouldn't.
And it's like hidden down a street. Like, if you don't know it's here, you know, you don't really, you'd walk right by it. On the boardwalk, you know, it's kind of a hidden little gem. And I don't know what the city would be without these kind of places.
Well, to many more good years. Cheers to our first road trip. You've been listening to the Atlantic City Story, available on iTunes and SoundCloud. Thanks for listening.